Hello, and welcome back for another affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care Podcast, conversations with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida, as well as providing advice and support for those entering the field. My name is Victor. I'm a third-year graduate student here in the Department of Clinical Health Psychology, working with Dr. Jeff Boisneau, and today we're joined by Nicole Fitzgerald. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Nicole is a T32 pre-doctoral fellow here at the University of Florida in the Department of Epidemiology under the mentorship of Dr. Linda Kotler. And a fun fact about Nicole that I found online, she's been on Twitter since 2009 and was endorsed by colleagues in a past job as having social media expertise.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, it's on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was, I worked in content marketing for a little bit. So that was, it used to be a relevant thing. But yeah, I'm not.
It's still relevant.
Yeah, I'm not like super active on Twitter. I've just had that account for a long time. Right. But yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's really great to have you here, Nicole. I'm excited to talk with you today. Just a quick overview. We've got some questions about your career, where you've been and where you're going, about the research that you're doing and other academic work. And then we'll end by going over some advice for other early career professionals, folks interested in getting started in the journey that is this field.
All right.
So just to start, what's new, Nicole? What you've been working on lately?
So right now I'm involved in kind of two ongoing projects that my mentor, Dr. Kotler, is a PI on. So the first one is the National Drug Early Warning System Project, or NDUS. It's a five-year grant funded by NIDA and involves scientists from New York University and FAU, Florida Atlantic University in Boca, and then scientists from University of Florida and several departments were kind of trying to predict new drug trends, new and emerging drug trends, new psychoactive substances developing, like new synthetic cathinones, new novel opioids, new fentanyl analogs, things like that, that may or may not become relevant to the field.
I'm hearing you talk about this and I'm thinking of like a tornado warning or here in Florida, like a hurricane warning. Is it like looking, just to get an overview, because there's a bunch of stuff that you're working on. Is this system like setting up like a country by country warning for like quality of drugs or where new drugs are spreading from a biological perspective?
The goal of the project, ultimately, some of those indicators that we're using that we're harmonizing together, they're what we would call lagged indicators. So let's say we have data from, a medical examiner that shows that X amount of people, like decedents, had this drug in their system after they passed. Like that gives us an idea of a drug trend, but it's too late to prevent those deaths, right?
Right.
So, even drug seizures, like the data, they go through so many. There's so many processes, especially with these kind of government data, where we might not know right away what's been seized. It might have to be entered into a database, and then that has to be quality checked. And then 6 months later, we have our quarter, results for something. But in those 6 months, like, could we have prevented something? Could we have, disseminated a warning, an early warning? So ultimately, like, the goal is this early warning system. So we're trying to incorporate in this kind of like data harmonization effort, incorporate some leading indicators. So things that might get ahead of that. One of them that we've been working with a lab at Florida Atlantic University on, and it's actually the lab that I was a part of when I was an undergraduate at Florida Atlantic University. I kind of looped them in when I started here. Like, we're using kind of machine learning techniques to look at drug forum data. So online discussions about new drugs, new research chemicals, new ways of using drugs and looking at spikes and mentions, essentially, and then kind of training these algorithms to anticipate when something might be an issue, when there is a new drug, and then disseminating that rapidly.
You know what, Nicole?
Yeah.
That's that social media expertise coming back in again. scouring the subreddits to build the early warning system.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's this other project, Nicole?
This project, I started kind of my involvement, and this kind of goes into how I got linked up with people at the University of Florida and with my current mentor. When I was an undergrad at Florida Atlantic University, I was studying psychology and I was interested in addiction research. And I applied to a summer research internship that NIDA has to get undergrads working in the addiction science field. It's a summer internship. I highly recommend it if anyone is interested. I ended up getting placed at Dr. Kotler's lab at the University of Florida. And I was really, that was actually my top choice because you can kind of pick what labs you're interested in out of this giant list of labs participating in this program. Because I was interested like from a, in a more abstract way, I had no exposure to epidemiology at that point. FAU doesn't have like a public health school or any kind of epi courses. But I was reading about like the idea of upstream kind of research. So like that is it an analogy or a parable? I don't know what it is. That the story where it's like somebody notices people are falling into the river and they're drowning. And so they try to pull them out of the river one by one. And it's this whole thing. And then someone else says, why don't we look upstream to see why they're falling into the river in the first place and stop them from even falling into the river. And it's like the upstream policies and prevention efforts that
I don't think I've heard that parable before.
Is it a parable? What is a parable?
I don't know. What in the story, what did they look upstream and find? Did a bridge blow out or something?
I honestly have no idea. That's what I remember. It's just that kind of like paradigm shift of, you know, instead of, and there is value obviously to working, you know, individually with people where they're at, but like the impact you can make when you go upstream and try to change things at, you know, the population level, like that really resonated with me. And so I was like, I want to get some experience in epidemiology to see if, you know, looking at the distribution and determinants of substance use and use disorders, and then how we can use that to, you know, ultimately control and prevent these disorders. Yeah, yeah. So I got into the program and I came up here just for the summer to work with Dr. Kotler, and I was working on this project, and it was introduced to me as a back translational rodent model study, which I didn't know what that meant at first, but essentially it's an R21, R33 grant. And it involves investigators in epidemiology, as well as in the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry. So Dr. Kotler, Dr. Nackstedt, and Dr. Setlow, and Dr. Striley as well in epidemiology. So it was this back translational study where the ultimate goal is to create rodent models for cocaine use disorder that work, essentially. So we want a rodent model where we can test a new drug to treat cocaine seeking, you know, ultimately cocaine use disorder. Right now, up to this date, there is currently no FDA approved treatment for cocaine use disorder. There's just, you know, the trials, the agents sometimes, or I guess this isn't like necessarily my area, so I don't want to speak too authoritatively on it, but sure. A lot of the times, like when a new pharmacological agent for cocaine use disorder, it works in the rodent model, and then when you try to translate it to the clinic, it doesn't work in humans.
Right.
So there's some disconnect there. And the hypothesis that our group had was that it was because these rodent models are not accurately capturing real world human patterns of cocaine use, because humans don't just use cocaine. They use alcohol. They use cannabis. They use more than one drug.
Oh, like polysubstance.
Exactly. Polysubstance use. But the vast majority of animal models, especially for cocaine use disorder, only involve the administration of cocaine. So like if you administer cocaine and alcohol or cocaine and cannabis, you have these neurobiological interactions. So like cocaine and alcohol can produce coca ethylene. So basically we're not considering multiple drug use, and that can affect like the timing and the order and the duration of multiple drug use can affect these outcomes that aren't being adequately captured in the models. Right. So the goal of this study was to, instead of starting with the rats and then working towards the humans with these substances, we're starting with the humans and we're capturing the most common temporal patterns of polysubstance use. So we're asking humans who use cocaine, okay, how do you use cocaine with alcohol? How do you use cocaine with cannabis? And then we're taking these patterns that we've established and translating them into more accurate, more relevant rodent models for cocaine use disorder.
Wow.
So like,
that's clever.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. So that's the gist of it.
Yeah. So where is the stage of this project currently?
The R21, R33 kind of mechanism. So the R21, that's the human study, which is my involvement. That is where the epidemiologists in our department, that's where we're focusing our efforts on. So once we had the human patterns, we then gave it to the animal side, which is the R33 side. So that's Dr. Naxted and Dr. Setlow and their students. To take those patterns and create rat models of polysubstance use with cocaine. So when I was a NIDA intern for the summer, they had just started the focus groups for the project. So for the R21, there were three phases. And the first phase was, okay, we're going to get people who use cocaine and alcohol or marijuana, and we're going to have focus groups and learn how they use them and, you know, like the kind of that rich qualitative data that we can use to inform the creation of a brand new assessment to capture like very granular detail on the temporal patterns of when these drugs are administered in order to, because we can't just say, you know, this happens first, this happens second. If we're giving them to inform rat models, we need to know, okay, hour by hour, like what's happening at this hour, what's happening at this hour, to make them, you know, the most translationally relevant.
Right.
So I helped with some of the focus groups, and it was super interesting with the project. So after my summer there, I went back and finished my undergrad. Yeah, I had kind of like a very untraditional undergrad experience where I started school back in like 2010. I took a break and I worked in industry for a while, and then I went back to FAU.
What was going through your mind as you were taking that non-traditional approach, starting undergrad and then working in the industry for a while?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you then had this experience as an intern.
Right, right.
And that led you back to finish undergrad and apply for grad
school? Oh, no, yeah. Sorry, that was during my undergrad. Pretty non-traditional. So I started and then I worked for a while. I was doing journalism for a while, and that was like where my focus was. And then I got a job as a data journalist, and I kind of got into data and working with data. And I realized, like, you know, ultimately the power of data and the power of research design and how to answer really, really fascinating questions. And that led me back to, okay, I'm going to finish my degree. I really want to get into research. But at that point, it was like I was doing psychology and I was interested in substance use, but I wasn't sure, you know, like, do I stay in psychology? Do I, like, you know, where do I find the, I don't even know what you call it.
Niche.
Yeah. Like, where's my niche? Like, you know, what framework or what like orientation am I taking as I try to address these questions? And it was because of that like NIDA, the summer research program, that I ended up in epidemiology, essentially. Mm-hmm. That was where I decided. And then I went back, I finished school, and then I applied to the PhD program in epi to work with Dr. Kotler. And then kind of in between, like me finishing school and me starting that summer as a PhD student, I moved up to Gainesville to work as a research assistant on phase two of this study. That's where I was trying to go.
Oh, okay. So you were present for kind of every step of
this. Yeah. That's like great. Not, it didn't really like, it just kind of happened. It was interesting. So, I got a little bit of the qualitative research at the beginning. I started as a research assistant, in January, 2020. And then I actually became an interviewer for the study and I helped with the data management and data coordination, recruitment, everything that went into that. And we, at that point, the phase two of the study was testing the reliability of the new instrument that we had created to assess these detailed temporal patterns of cocaine polysubstance use.
Right.
We were recruiting, you know, to field the instrument. We wanted 120 people who were cocaine, you know, they were using cocaine and other substances, either alcohol and or cannabis. And then a subset of those people, they did a test retest study where they came back a week later and did the interview again. So we could look at the test retest reliability of our instrument.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's all really cool.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess with the time that we have left, I want to ask, what is next for you, Nicole?
So I've been working on questions related to polysubstance use, and I've even just through reading the literature, I've identified like multiple gaps in knowledge that I think deserve more exploration. And just, you know, there aren't a lot of even theoretical frameworks specific to the use of more than one drug. And even the terminology is used inconsistently. You know, we're not always defining the intentionality behind use, the temporal proximity of multiple use, which means different things. So there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on this subject.
And I have no doubt that you'll be able to pull it off, Nicole.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. One last thing that we end every one of these conversations with, if there was a piece of advice or feedback or encouragement that you could give your younger self or someone else in undergrad or even in high school interested in taking the path that you have and getting involved with, in epidemiology and psychology and substance use and all those things, what advice would you give them?
Again, I did not have the most traditional path, but just applying for things, even when I feel like there is no plausible way I would ever be accepted to them. You know, if I hadn't applied for that research internship program, I would have never gotten the experience that I did, which led to applying to the PhD, which led to my current work.
Don't let self-doubt bring you down.
Yeah. Right? I think it's that kind of imposter syndrome that everyone talks about that I've realized never really goes away. You know, always thinking that, you know, at the next stage, I'll be here, I'll be doing this. But I think back to the non-traditional timeline, just not comparing where you are to others, not thinking there has to be a traditional timeline or a traditional trajectory. And do you want like practical advice? Like,
I think that's it. I think you just did it.
Okay.
Yeah. We just talked about how self-doubt can bring you down.
Yeah.
And you just gave some very good advice for folks, and then you immediately started doubting yourself.
That's perfect, right? Yeah. It's all that was, you know, I was trying to prove the point.
An example, absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you, Nicole. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for your explanation of your research and your advice and everything. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how these studies turn out and what you do with your career.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We also want to give a thanks to the University of Florida Center for Addiction Research and Education, Dr. Oliver Grundman, Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon, Dr. Joanne Paris, and all of our mentors and future collaborators. Catch you next time.